Good evening and welcome everyone to the Simple Actions Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name is Amy and I am an alcoholic.
Hello, Amy.
Hi, Amy.
For those of you who care to join us, let's open the meeting with the Serenity Prayer. God,
grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
Amen. The Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance this evening. These premises are non-smoking. Our group is welcome to use this room and the restrooms exclusively. They are across the main foyer and up a small flight of stairs. At this time, please silence your cell phones. Also, we respectfully ask that those present please refrain from unnecessary moving around the room. This will keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum and will allow everyone to listen uninterrupted. This group practices the spiritual foundations of anonymity, singleness of purpose, and effective sponsorship. As a group, we believe that Alcoholics Anonymous provides alcoholics with a set of clear directions on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of simple actions. These actions are contained in the book Alcoholics Anonymous. It is the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and to focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of AA's simple actions. The AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not aligned with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. The format of this meeting is an open big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step discussed tonight. This evening, we are discussing step three. Please welcome our panel, Brenda and Desiree. Okay, I will read the first paragraph on page 60, and then the panel will share for a few minutes each on the reading. Step three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. Our description of the alcoholic, the chapter to the agnostic, and our personal adventures before and after make clear three pertinent ideas. A, that we were alcoholic and could not manage our own lives. B, that probably no human power could have relieved our alcoholism. And C, that God could and would if he were sought.
Hi everybody, my name is Brenda and I am an alcoholic. Can you hear me?
Brenda.
My home group is Friends of Bill W. Book Study in Suffolk, Virginia. We meet on Thursdays. We have a noon meeting, which is an As Bill Sees It meeting, and our 8 o'clock meeting is a book study and then a study 12 and 12 and the tradition study. So if you're ever out that way at 8 o'clock on a Thursday night, please join us. Okay, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. And I like the ABCs of Alcoholics Anonymous. And for me, our personal adventures before and after. And I've got a few stories that we won't talk about now. But that I'm an alcoholic and I couldn't manage my own life. When I walked into the rooms, I really didn't realize that I was an alcoholic. I just had a drinking problem. And the longer I stayed in the rooms, and as we read these pages, you know, they read the doctor's opinion. Every, you know, that was the first thing my sponsor told me, and I bet she told me that hundreds of times. You know, that was supposed to convince me. Well, I still thought, maybe, maybe not. But once I got to this page 60 and read everything that was presented and listened to everything at the meetings, yes, I am an alcoholic, and my life had become unmanageable based on my personal adventures before and after. I was convinced that probably no human power could have relieved my alcoholism. I had a son who was very concerned about me. He begged me to stop drinking. I did everything that the book talks about to cut back my drinking, because stopping drinking was not an option. I just needed to cut back. So, but you know, I was a wine drinker, blackout drinker. So I went from white wine was my favorite. So I switched to red wine, because then I wouldn't drink so much. That didn't work either. When I ran out of wine, whatever was in the house would do, and I even drank some moonshine. Ugh. Don't recommend it, but it kept me where I needed to be. So no human aid. Self-knowledge, you know, and how it works, self-knowledge avails us nothing. I knew all about what y'all were talking about, you know. I understand what's going on, but I couldn't stop drinking. And it tells us in C that God could and would, the important part for this alcoholic, if he were sought. And the God of my understanding was, when I came in, was the God of my childhood. I was raised a Southern Baptist, bless my heart. it was, you know, fire and brimstone. I was going to hell because I liked to dance, I liked to smoke, and I liked to drink. And that was the God that I knew about, up there judging me and writing in his big book, you know, the big, big book. And so coming into the rooms and listening and finally being open-minded enough to, you know, it's working for you guys. All right, I'll try it. And I was in the program about 9 months doing what was suggested before I found a God of my understanding, a loving God. And the word God turns a lot of people off. I use that because you know right away I'm talking about a big power greater than me. Doesn't mean that it's the God, your God, it's mine. So. But we use that term because everybody understands right away what you're talking about, you know. So don't give me that, you know. I wanted to debate it for a while, and I lost that. So for this alcoholic, debating the issue did not get me sober. Giving in and being willing, and if I'd like to, does anybody know how many times the word willing is in the big book? Being willing to give it a try. Just that. You know, I was a drunk when I walked in here. And what was it going to hurt me to give this a try? Was I happy still being a drunk? Not really. So if that's what it's going to take, all right, I'll try it your way. And for this alcoholic, it worked. Maybe it'll work for you. And that's all I've got. Thanks.
Thanks.
I'm Desiree. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Desiree.
My home group is Wednesdays at noon. We just moved to Christ in St. Luke's. The meeting is called "And When We Were Wrong." Never happens to me. And we're a 12 and 12 step study, I guess. I mean, loosely a step study. And my sobriety date is March 2nd, 1996. I got sober 4 days before I turned 19. I don't know why I said that, but I did. We made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. You know, the first time I did step three, I was, I don't know, like 2 weeks into rehab. I was in an outpatient program. I'd been sober in AA for 2.5 years. I was going to a meeting every day. I was not working the steps, and I was having sex with my sponsor, not suggested, and I was keeping it secret. It was supposed to be secret. He was 40 years older than me, and he was a pillar of AA, and yada, yada, yada. So I was not working step three. And I went to a meeting. I said, I feel like drinking. And some guy after me goes, I've been out drinking and it's great. And I was like, all right. And I left the meeting and I started drinking. So I do know from experience that meetings are incredibly important, but meetings alone can't keep me sober. They're just not enough. But they have to be part of the puzzle for me. So anyway, after that relapse, which was pretty awful, I ended up in the state treatment program. And my counselor was in AA, and she said, we got to take step three together. And so I was a couple weeks sober, and she sat in a chair, and I sat in a chair, and we said the third step prayer together out of the big book. And I didn't feel anything at all. I didn't really know what was happening. I didn't know why I was taking with the counselor instead of my sponsor. I was deeply unsettled. I mean, I was coming back from a relapse, and this relationship I had been in that I'd been keeping secret was abusive, and I got drunk. I ended up back at his house. You know, it was just like, I was just unsettled. And so I won't say that I took the third step that day, but I did the motions, and I surrendered that little bit where someone told me what to do. It seemed pretty innocuous, so why not do it? You know, in AA, you always hear you're willing to whatever you would do for a drink, you should do that to get to a meeting or to stay sober. I actually don't think that should apply to many of us. Things I did for a drink, I don't really want to do to stay sober. And I don't think God asked me to do them to stay sober. But this was innocuous. So I did it. But I'll be honest, I don't really think I took, with the drink, I took the third step immediately. Coming back from that relapse, I could not stop drinking. I was on the phone with the woman from AA. She says, put the drink down. And I want to put the drink down, and I can't, you know, I'm on the phone with AA, and my other hand's drinking, and I'm trying to buy crack from some gay toothless guy, and I'm trying to figure out how I can, you know, like, how we're going to figure that out, because I have no money, but he's, you know, it's just like, and that was within like 45 minutes of picking up a drink again. And when I came back this time, God struck me sober, and I knew in my heart of hearts that I was powerless over alcohol. I knew that I could not stay sober by myself. I knew it in a way that I'd never known before. And so, you know, I went to two meetings a day. And for me, that's kind of how I test my sponsees if they've done the third step. I mean, are you going to a meeting every day? You're doing service work? Do you have a home group? Are you calling me? I mean, for me, those are kind of the basic building blocks of step three. If you're not willing to do the AA actions, then I don't feel like talking philosophy or getting into the inner workings of your life, you know? Like, you got to do the basic stuff here. And I did that for years, you know, I did that, but I did not take the third step, I think, until I was about 8 years sober. I lost my mind in sobriety. I was a full-time law student. I had a full-time job. I was going to a meeting every day, and I was out of control with romantic stuff. Is that a nice way of putting it? Because this is recorded and going online, and I'm a married woman today. But so I was out of control with romantic stuff, and I was having anxiety attacks every day. I was getting up and vomiting in the shower. But I'm going to a meeting every day, and I say my prayers on my knees, and I do a lot of service work, so why am I falling apart? And I mean, I was falling apart. And a huge part of my story is that I have, oh shoot, I've been going on way too long, 45 seconds. I have really crazy parents, like really crazy. And so during this time, my father's leaving me messages threatening to murder me if I don't call him back. And my mother is just, my mother talks about herself in the third person in baby voice and was leaving me crazy messages. And I had never accepted, I'm getting to the point. I had never accepted help from a sponsor in AA about my family relationships. I said, my family is so crazy, AA can't touch this. You know, like this is like beyond AA's help. And finally, I called my sponsor. I said, I am dying. I'm going to drink again. I'm dying. I don't know what to do with my mother and my father. I can't work 80 hours a week and go to meetings and stay sober and sane. You know, I was a workaholic and picking up people all over town. I was living in New York City, and she said, oh, so you're willing to surrender? And I said, yeah. She goes, let's do a four-step on your family. And it changed my whole life. You know, I had done plenty of four-steps, but my parents, my family of origin had never shown up on a four-step. Can you believe that? 8 years sober. And, oh, I don't resent my parents. I just wish my mother would kill herself. I mean, like, I really was so crazy. I didn't know that that was resentment. And then my sponsor saved my life when she told me, she goes, you don't have to feel anger for it to be a resentment. If it's an interaction that you've obsessed over or thought about more than once, put it on paper. And so I'll say that's when I got this ABC. I knew way before then that nobody was going to keep me sober. I used to put myself in rehab and mental hospitals. I did art projects. I took lithium. I snorted Ritalin and took sleeping pills to avoid drinking. You know, I do that. I knew that God could do it if he were sought, though I didn't know how to seek God. I thought I did, but I didn't. But I did not know that my life was unmanageable because of my alcoholism and because of me. I thought it was because of stuff that had happened to me. And that fourth step when I was about 8 years sober opened the door to realize that it's my internal interaction with the world that's unmanageable. And that God can even fix me. I mean, can you believe it? Thanks.
Thank you.
We're going to continue on page 60. Being convinced we were at step three, which is that we decided to turn our will and our life over to God as we understood him. Just what do we mean by that? And just what do we do? The first requirement is that we be convinced that any life run on self-will can hardly be a success. On that basis, we are almost always in collision with something or somebody, even though our motives are good. Most people try to live by self-propulsion. Each person is like an actor who wants to run the whole show, is forever trying to arrange the lights, the ballet, the scenery, and the rest of the players in his own way. If his arrangements would only stay put, if only people would do as he wished, the show would be great. Everybody, including himself, would be pleased. Life would be wonderful. In trying to make these arrangements, our actor may sometimes be quite virtuous. He may be kind, considerate, patient, generous, even modest and self-sacrificing. On the other hand, he may be mean, egotistical, selfish, and dishonest. But as with most humans, he is more likely to have varied traits.
Okay, this, what Amy just read, it's being convinced, comma. Being convinced, comma, we were at step three. It took, when you look back, it took all these pages here of reading all about Bill and the doctor's opinion and more about alcoholism and et cetera, et cetera. It took all these pages to convince me that I am an alcoholic and I'm now at step three. So that, to me, that is a big deal. Decided to turn my will and my life over to the care of God as I understood him. Just what do they mean by that? The first requirement, I'm convinced that any life run on self-will will hardly be a success. I ran my whole life on self-will. As I said, I was raised in the church. As soon as I got away from home, no time for that, you know. That's for people who really need it. So, but anyway, and it goes on about, you know, being selfish and self-centered and wanting to run the show and the control. I'm a control freak. You know, everything had to be my way. When I was married, I would make unilateral decisions without consulting him. Because, of course, if I wanted it, surely he would want it. So that's how I ran my life. Everything Brenda wanted to do had to be done. And most people try to live by self-propulsion. I was a workaholic when I worked. You know, in early, last one to leave, because I wanted to show them I was that good. We can't do without Brenda. Everything I did was look at me, look at me. And I needed your approval. And to get that, I had to do extra work. Desiree was talking about relationships. I had plenty of those. Just for the record, I've been married 3 times. The common denominator, and I rest my case. all because I was trying to live my life on self-propulsion, doing things myself. And it talks about, in trying to make these arrangements, well, everybody would do so much better if they just did things the way I wanted them done. You know, if we had something at the office and I didn't agree with it and it fell apart, well, it was because you didn't listen to me. You know, everything I did, I always knew best. Some people call it being a know-it-all. And, you know, I don't like that. But that's what I was. This is an honest program. That's exactly what I was. Don't get me wrong. I can still go there. I'm Brenda, and I'm an alcoholic. I'm a human being. My character defects will always be with me. The good news is that I start recognizing them now, and I know when to whoop, back up. You know, that pause when agitated or in doubt. I pause a lot, because those character defects pop up at any given time, and I never know when it's gonna happen. But I'm all these things it talks about. He may be kind, considerate, patient, generous, even modest, and self-sacrificing. I never did a daggone thing that there wasn't a motive behind the motive. You're supposed to pat me on the back and tell me what a good job I did. I needed that attention. I needed that, yay, kudos, Brenda, good job. I needed that. And that was the only reason I did it in the first place. I wanted you to tell me how good I was. You know, everything I did, I wanted to, you know, to make you think I'm good. And I hate that now when I think about it. On the other hand, now I was never mean. I'd sulk a lot, but I was never mean. Egotistical, I got a huge ego, still do. Selfish and dishonest, yes, I was those things. And anything I share with y'all, I'm not proud of it. What I'm proud of is that I'm here tonight able to say, I'm not that perfect person I wanted everybody to think I was at one time. I have been humbled. Desiree was talking, working that fourth and fifth step brought me to my knees. I was so ashamed, and I carried that shame around for a long time. But studying this book, working step three, and being willing to give it a chance. And so far, so good. And that's all I got.
Thanks, Desiree.
Thank you. Thanks. Being convinced we were at step three, which is that we decided to turn our will and our life over to God as we understood him. Just what do we mean by that, and just what do we do? I think being convinced that a life of self-will is still hard for me to understand sometimes. But I will tell you. So let's start with how do we turn our will and our life over. That's easier for me to share my experience with. In early sobriety, it was showing up at a lot of meetings and making coffee and going to the noon meeting at 10 a.m. because I didn't trust myself not to get drunk before the meeting started, and just doing that kind of stuff. And then I shared, you know, I was like 8 years sober and out of my mind. Maybe I was 60, I don't know, whatever. So I don't know if other alcoholics have this problem. I don't know if I had it because I came into AA so young. I started going to meetings at 14. I don't know if it's my arrogance or what. But I would hear these kind of platitudes in AA and confuse that with a spiritual life. Where I got sober, they used to always say, you come into AA and you become a good wife, be a good daughter, be a good spouse, be a good friend. And, you know, kind of popular culture, okay, a good daughter, I have to go home on Sundays. I have to visit my grandparents on holidays. I've got to love them, you know. I have to enjoy their, I didn't even know. I was so arrogant and so ashamed and so, I was still pretty isolated even in AA. I never asked. I was just like, oh, that's stupid, you know, or I would feel so guilty trying to apply what I thought were A principles to my life. You know, be a good daughter, be a good daughter. And so I would try to be a good daughter. Of course, I wouldn't run that by my sponsor or my therapist. And I just, like, what I heard people share at a meeting, I would do that, and I would always fall apart. You know, I mean, again, I don't. I was just with my sister for 10 days on vacation, and it started off with a meeting with a lawyer to set up a special needs trust for my crazy mom, and then it kind of. But so my family stuff is a little up right now, and I don't want to blame my parents, and I actually have an incredible life, so there's nothing to even blame them for. But trying to work the third step based on kind of general stuff that people share at meetings was a disaster for me, and it's not the third step. When I took the third step on my parents and said to Hazel, I'm dying, please help me. I don't want to drink, and I don't know what to do with my father who's like threatening to rape and murder me on voicemails. Like, what do you do with that? And when I did this fourth step, what it revealed to me and how I had to behave was nothing what I was hearing at meetings. Do you know? I mean, sometimes you hear people share their real, honest, gut-wrenching struggle and the actions they take with difficult people, and you can identify and be like, man, there's some spiritual principle there that I can apply to my life. Somehow I wasn't hearing that. I was hearing, be a good daughter, send a card, don't forget Mother's Day, be a good employee, you know, give your boss, you know, don't steal from your boss, work really hard. Well, he was a lawyer. All the partners were stealing from me, paying me nothing for that. You know, I mean, like, there was like, boys, you know. So what I discovered, though, thank God, is that when you work the 12 steps, they reveal to you how you're supposed to live, do God's will in your own life. You know what I mean? Like, I don't have to be the same as the woman who sends her mom a card every Sunday and calls her on Wednesdays. You know what? I've been sharing this with my sponsor. My sister and I are setting up a special needs trust for my mom. And, you know, I'm not doing it because I love my mom. I'm doing it because it's the right thing. Because my sister has been taking care of her for 20 years. And because when I got breast cancer, I got in touch with my mom again. I'm going to Boston for treatment. My sister has opened her house to me. Every time I go to Boston for treatment, she gives me a key to her house, she gives me a car, she cooks me my special diet foods. I'm doing the special needs trust for her and my relationship, and because it's the right thing to do. So it has nothing to do with being a good daughter. You know what I mean? That's just like, that's not even on my spiritual radar. You know what I mean? And that doesn't mean it's easy. It's still pretty rocky, and I can't wait to talk to my sponsor about it. But, you know, so doing this four-step reveals to me this stuff in a way that I don't necessarily get listening at meetings or reading self-help books or whatever. You know, my first four step really showed me that I was a blamer. If my dishes were dirty, it was my parents' fault. You know, like everything, I was depressed. I needed medication. That's why my dishes were dirty, you know? Like, I mean, I don't know if you had this in early sobriety. My friend Jane used to say, if you can't do your dishes, just throw them away. You know, go to the secondhand store and get, I was just always throwing away dishes. But when you're 8 years sober and still throwing away your dishes because you can't handle washing them, there's a problem, you know? I mean, again, I was in law school. My friend Mike did this intervention. He's like, dude, you look homeless. You got to, like, dress a little bit better if, you know, this is going to be your career. I had this coat that all the buttons were coming off, and I was tying it with a robe tie. You know, it was just crazy. Anyway, so the good news is whatever I say my experience doesn't have to be your spiritual path. But it is my experience, and what I've heard at meetings and what I've seen in people's life is that if you work the 12 steps, God's will in your life will become, you'll know what you have to do. And if you don't, at least you have someone you're struggling with and you can be honest with about, like, I still don't know what I'm supposed to do in this situation. And so for me, this turning my will, my life over is about the 12 steps. And so being convinced we're at step three, I tell you, man, step three for me has definitely been piecemeal. You know, first it was about the drink. And then it was about quitting smoking. And then it was about my family insanity. And then it was my work addiction. And I have never just been like, God, take it. I know you know better than me. And, you know, my sponsor, you know, blah, blah, blah. I'm going to just trust her today. You know, like, that's just not how I operate. And I don't necessarily think that questioning and reading and analyzing one's life is bad. It's just, you know, it's a tool like any other. But when my analysis and questioning and decision making isn't based on a belief that a higher power cares about me, that I've chosen a sponsor who has some wisdom and is in a fiduciary relationship with me where she's thinking about my best interest, then I'm in trouble. And so lastly on the self-will, you know, the third step that's in my life these days is this stupid cancer. I mean, I'm no evidence of disease, but it's like a full-time job trying not to die, I tell you. And it's like so much work. And I don't trust my oncologist. I don't trust my surgeon. And I feel like I'm right in that regard. I get different treatment in Boston than I do in Virginia. It's just the state of medical care. You get different care in a city than you do in a more rural area. And not that this is rural. You know, so I do a lot of research and I take a lot of medications that makes my oncologist roll his eyes at me, and I have to privately pay, and I spend about 2 hours a day doing research, usually Monday through Friday, and I'd rather be doing other stuff sometimes. And so at what point am I being obsessive and controlling and not trusting, and at what point am I just being like a smart patient advocate? You know, I don't know, but I'll tell you what I have discovered is if it's 11 p.m. and I have a pang in my heart that my cancer is going to come back and I'm about to die, that's not the time to start doing research. You know, that's the third step for me. Desiree, you're anxious. Who wouldn't be anxious? You were 40 when you got diagnosed with cancer. Put it aside. You're not dying tonight. You know, and so, and other times when I'm pushing against the system, I don't know. You know, I also do volunteer work to help other women push against the system. I'm not doing it just for myself. I'm trying to change the whole culture of caring for oncology patients. So that's my third step stuff these days. When am I pushing too hard, and when am I trusting God? Thanks.
Thanks.
We're going to turn over to page 61. What usually happens? The show doesn't come off very well. He begins to think life doesn't treat him right. He decides to exert himself even more. He becomes, on the next occasion, still more demanding or gracious, as the case may be. Still, the play does not suit him. Admitting he may be somewhat at fault, he is sure that other people are more to blame. He becomes angry, indignant, self-pitying. What is his basic trouble? Is he not really a self-seeker, even when trying to be kind? Is he not a victim of the delusion that he can wrest satisfaction and happiness out of this world if he only manages well? Is it not evident to all the rest of the players that these are the things he wants? And do not his actions make each of them wish to retaliate, snatching all they can get out of the show? Is he not, even in his best moments, a producer of confusion rather than harmony?
Well, I'm Brenda, and I'm an alcoholic, and I'm a producer of confusion.
Amen.
I love that part because it's true. I can still do that too. But resting satisfaction out of what I do, what people, you know, things that I want people to do, if it doesn't go my way, I like that. Still more demanding or gracious, you know. I'm a con artist that way. I can be, you know, one of the nicest people you'll ever want to meet, because down under, I really want you to do what I want you to do, you know. And that, for me, is the way I used to be. Knock on wood. I think I'm hopeful that that is a part of my past. I loved what Desiree was saying. The third step, working the third step. For me, the obsession that I used to go through of about problems and this, you know, they won't do this and they won't do that, and what can I do to fix this, and that constant, we call it, you know, in my group, the squirrel cage. You know, my mind just won't stop because I want things to go my way. I'm delusional. It tells me right here. Is he not a victim of the delusion that he can wrest satisfaction and happiness out of the world if I only manage well. And one of the things that my sponsor and I do, I don't know if y'all are familiar with the man, it's Emmett Fox, he's long gone, metaphysical teacher. And one of the things when things aren't going my way, I recently lost my father. My mother has slight dementia, and she's a mean dementia person. And trying not to think about the stuff that she has pulled, because she is who she is. One of the things that Emmett Fox, in his readings, calls the golden key. And the golden key is, and it works in any situation, give it a shot. Be open-minded and willing to try. One of the things that, I do when things are really bothering me and I can't get them out of my head is focus on, and my mantra is, God is with me, God is with me, God is with me. And I say that over and over. And when that little mouse of an idea, mom, starts, I say it even more. It works. It helps calm me. Step three has taught me how to calm my mind. Because in order, you know, step three, and we'll read it later on, the prayer, there is no amen. Because that's when the action comes in. We're just beginning. So I've decided I want to turn my will and my life over to whoever's out there. For me, a long time, it was my group. It was y'all. And going through the motions, saying the prayers, doing what my sponsor told me to do, by the ninth month or so, suddenly, I suddenly understood what that power greater than me was. I had a God of my understanding. But it's not, you know, it's not overnight. And these are the things they're talking about here. The person that I used to be, some of you may be able to relate to some of this stuff, you know, selfish, self-centered, very controlling. And the whole thing of, you know, constantly doing things not for the right reasons, but for the reasons that I was going to get something out of it. To heck with you. And Desiree also mentioned the thing about being a good daughter and doing this and doing that. There's a line. There's a line. And we find it. We set our boundaries. That's another thing. I read A Language of Letting Go. I'm a codependent. I'm sure none of you have that issue. But it teaches me, you know, how to set boundaries with folks. And being a good daughter means doing the right thing. Being a good person, period. Doing the right thing may not always feel good, but, you know, I try to treat people the way I want to be treated. I do not send my mother cards, okay? But I do make sure she's taken care of. And we all have that issue or that person in our lives, I think. At least just from talking with people, that seems to be the case. But yeah, these things that they're reading and writing about on these pages, for me, it rings true. Selfish, self-centered, controlling, I want everything to go my way. If it's not going my way, I'm not happy. And that's all I've got.
Thanks. Who even knows how to share about what we just read? I guess to turn my brain off a little bit and rely on my intuition, as my sponsor also talks about, you know, I keep thinking about two things. One, I have this dictionary from 1936, and it defines insanity as the inability to foresee the consequences of one's actions. I really identify with that, in just about every area of my life. And I also, I don't know why I keep thinking about it, but the third step really reminds me, I just think about it in my own life, when I've been really willful, is oftentimes to avoid feeling grief. You know, I was thinking about this crazy relationship I had, this woman who I, told me she was 8 years sober. Actually, she was 6 weeks sober, but I didn't know that when we got engaged. And she was smoking pot, which I also, I don't think it counts as sober if you're smoking pot or using drugs. I mean, whatever. You know, I don't even want to talk about that. But if my sobriety includes not smoking pot or using drugs. And so the inability to foresee the consequences of one action. I knew this woman, 2 weeks, but we were madly in love, and we get engaged, and then she's actually not sober and hasn't been to a meeting for years. And it's like, well, that's why I didn't see you at meetings in the small town we live in. But no, she's the love of my life. And my friend Joanna was like, Desiree. And I was like, no, she's the love of my life. And then when it became apparent that she wasn't, because she's like, not sober, and she's lying to me, and a million other things. Remember that inability to foresee the consequences of one's actions? So I have this delusional thing where, I get intense, and this is going to be the best thing ever, and whether it's a food or a best friend or a romantic partner. And so that's part of the third step for me, is just slowing down a little bit. I like being revved up and ripping the marrow of life, man. Yeah, that's my thing. And it gets me into a lot of trouble. And sometimes it saves my life. But so then the dysfunction is I'm in a relationship. I'm living with this woman. I just bought this like ridiculously expensive ring. And now I have to get out of the relationship, and I don't want to because it's going to hurt. It's going to hurt her. It's going to hurt me because, I'm getting older. I'm in my 30s. I want to get married. I want to have kids. Why isn't it happening for me yet? Maybe that anxiety is why I thought I was in love with someone after knowing them for 2 weeks. Though my husband and I only knew each other for 2 months or something when we got married. So I guess my track record is getting better. And boy, girl, does it really matter? It's Pride Month. So the third step is, and then I start thinking, well, maybe I'll get her a sponsor. This is like the antithesis of the third step. That's when my self-will is like, I don't want to end this relationship because it's going to hurt. I hate feeling grief. I will do anything to avoid feeling grief. I mean, I don't know if other people feel that way, but it makes me feel frantic and frenzied. I'd rather rip out my eyeballs and eat them than feel grief, And so that's when I get crazy. Well, maybe if she has a sponsor, maybe it didn't really count that she was lying to me. Though I thought I asked her directly how long she was sober, but maybe she said 6 weeks, but I didn't hear it because maybe, so that's the self-will for me. And it doesn't necessarily look the way that I thought self-will was going to look. I got sober with a lot of old men, and they talk about taking advantage of people and exploiting others. And that's not really been my thing, though I did once put our house on the market without telling my husband. I was like, well, we got to sell it. So there you go. He doesn't care anyways. I'm in charge. It's just true. But, that's its own problem. And I'm like, why aren't we partners? Don't be a boy. Be a man. Don't sell the house without telling him. So I don't know how that relates to this, but I think that it does. That my inability to foresee the consequences of my actions gets me into sticky situations, and that usually involves other people, and the thought of a relationship changing or terminating is so painful that my willfulness comes in and I try to avoid it up until I can't stand it one more second and I'm gonna drink because I'm not living honestly, and then I do the shift, And that one was a disaster. She started drinking again. She was also a lawyer, had a law office in the same building I had a law office. She started stalking me, interrupting my meetings with clients. I had to close my practice and start working with this other lawyer who couldn't fucking type, so he wanted me to be a secretary, part of my swearing. Another story. All of that came from thinking I was in love with someone that I knew for 2 weeks. All of that came from that. And that was definitely a moment of an inability to foresee the consequences of my actions. And it just, my whole life actually really fell apart after that. I went into finance, which is even worse than law. But God saved my life by sending me to Norfolk, where my doctor made me get a mammogram. And that's all I have to remember, that I actually do have a higher power that that's keeping me alive. Mm-hmm. And if I quiet myself, if I'm not so afraid of feeling grief, my life unfolds in ways that is just so deep and satisfying that I can't plan it. You know what I mean? And I'm a planner, and I can't plan how good my life has become.
Thanks.
All right, page 62. So our troubles, we think, are basically of our own making. They arise out of ourselves, and the alcoholic is an extreme example of self-will run riot, though he usually doesn't think so. Above everything, we alcoholics must be rid of the selfishness. We must, or it kills us. God makes that possible. And there often seems no way of entirely getting rid of self without his aid. Many of us had moral and philosophical convictions galore, but we could not live up to them, even though we would have liked to. Neither could we reduce our self-centeredness much by wishing or trying on our own power. We had to have God's help.
So our troubles, we think, are basically our own making. What a concept. So, yes, absolutely. I was thinking, you know, I listen to Clancy CDs. Some of you may be familiar with him. Listen to Joe and Charlie. And one of the things that Clancy said about the third step is, you know, try getting God to pay your rent when you've run out of money, you know. Because I think there are those who think that God is up there with his magic wand. Okay, you can get sober, your rent will get paid, you know. No. As long as I have that daily visit with my higher power, and do I do it every day? No, because I'm much too busy with other important things. What a joke. But that's how crazy I can get. The bills still come due. The rent still needs to be paid. I still have health issues. But the good news is that when I stop trying to fix it myself, when I stop trying to find excuses about things, when I give it up, my head is clear. That's part of calming the mind. My thought process is clear. And suddenly, what is it in the ninth step promises? We intuitively know how to handle situations which used to baffle us. And that's part of what working this program does. Finding a God of my understanding has made my life much simpler. Is it easier? Life on life's terms sucks. But I've heard it said, you know, God never gives us too much to handle. Life, on the other hand, will. So if I am trying to run things myself, self will run riot. And back in the day, I never really thought that was true. I didn't think I was, you know, self-willed run riot. Hey, I'm doing a pretty good job here. I've got a car. I've got a home. I've got money in the bank. But it was the way I was handling and conducting myself in the world, around other people, around other folks. The stuff I drove myself crazy with. The thoughts. Laying awake at night. Obsessing over something. You know, I cannot control anything. And when I walked in the rooms, they said, keep your head where your feet are. What the heck does that mean? What does that mean? Stay in the moment. Tomorrow's not here yet. I don't have to worry about anything that's supposed to happen tomorrow. I can plan. But then sometimes my higher power has other plans and laughs at me when I say, but. So it's just learning to accept that there is something bigger in the universe out there, and it ain't me. So I like that. Neither could we reduce our self-centeredness much By wishing or trying on our own power, we had to have God's help. And every morning, I have a friend who's got 42 years of sobriety. 42. Every morning, and I can share this because he shares it. Every morning when he gets up, part of his prayer is, God, please help me not drink today. And at the end of the day, if that everything goes well, he thanks his God for keeping him sober and not picking up a drink. 42 years. Now, this self-centered and selfish alcoholic thinks she can get by without praying and having that daily visit. Because again, and I'm quoting Emmett Fox, I have so much many more important things to do. And that is just not true. A five-minute prayer, serenity prayer if you can't think of anything else to say, but that running, trying to run things under my own willpower and selfish, self-centered ego, I'm one this close to another drink, because my life is so good now, because the God of my understanding has helped me understand and try and what the design for living that this book gives us. And I love it. I think I forgot to tell y'all. My sobriety date is October the 21st, 2011. So I'm still a baby. I got a whole lot to learn, but so far, life is good. Thank you.
Thanks. Well, I don't think I've ever heard that before, that we need God's help to remove our selfishness, but it's true. I cannot stay sober by myself, and I have been, I mean, has taught me some tricks to pass a socially acceptable person so that my selfishness is not so apparent that I can't get employed. You know, like, it's, you laugh, but it's true, like, you know, how are you doing? You know, after you've puked on somebody for 45 minutes. What's your name again? You know, like, kind of putting, like, your chair away and somebody else's chair because maybe they can't put their chair away at the meeting. You know, like, kind of those, like, basic things I learned in AA. You know, aren't they, like, kind of basic life skills? My parents weren't teaching those to me, but I learned them here. But this deep selfishness. And again, I think, depending on your gender and where you were raised and your personality, your selfishness is going to look different than mine, you know. And so how they describe it here might not resonate for you, but it doesn't mean you don't have it. Doesn't mean I didn't have it, you know. It took me a lot of years to be able to see it, and I still struggle with it. And, you know, I can tell with my kids when I'm behaving in a way because I want them to behave a certain way to make my day easier, which is actually not an awful goal as a parent. You are allowed to exist peacefully within a family system. Can you believe that shit? You're allowed to, like, exist with serenity as a mother. But that is still very different than, am I talking to them a certain way because I'm parenting them? Because that's what they need from me in that moment. You know, do I want my kid to quit screaming because it's not gonna serve her well in life, because she screams all, it's true, we had to bring her to a speech language pathologist. She just, like, starts screaming. I mean, she's special needs, so, like, we've had to, like, work with her. But when I'm doing it, because I can't stand it for one more second, you know, versus, like, wow, this is not gonna be useful for her. I'm feeling sensory overload because it's been going on for so long. What do I need to do to react to this same thing? You know, like, that fundamental attitude is very different. And I tend to live in the selfish one more than I do the other one, but sometimes the other one does kick in. And I guess I don't really know what to say about it. You know, all that is really a gift from God. I mean, when I was many, many years sober, it feels like 8, 9, 10, you know, sober too long to want to get drunk over a resentment. There's this woman I hated in AA. I really hated her. I prayed that she would kill herself. Was my prayer for her. They told me I had to pray for her, and I hated her. And I would see her walking, and I'd have to pull over and stop my car because I was afraid I would run her down. And and I was at a, it was a Friday night, and I needed to get groceries. I wanted to get groceries, and I knew that I couldn't go into the grocery store without buying alcohol. I could not go in. I was going to pick up a drink if I went down past the alcohol, and it was because I hated her. You know, so God taught me at 10 years sober how to forgive. And it was so obnoxious and annoying that I had to learn forgiveness from a person I didn't want to forgive, you know? Like, I wish it had been, like, somebody I liked, you know, that I had to learn the lesson from, not from her. Thank God she moved to Chicago. But may she have a happy life and a peaceful heart. And so I feel like having my selfishness chipped away has been like that. It gets incredibly painful. Things are really weird. All of a sudden, I'm afraid I'm going to be struck drunk. And then I have to be kind or think of another person or learn to forgive. But God gives me that. You know, there's no way I could have forgiven that woman on my own. I didn't even want to forgive her. You know, I mean, I was praying that she would kill herself. It's pretty awful. And I felt good about it. I was praying for her, you know. So that's all I got. Thanks.
The last two readings are on page 62 and 63. This is the how and why of it. First of all, we had to quit playing God. It didn't work. Next, we decided that hereafter in this drama of life, God was going to be our director. He is the principal, we are his agents. He is the father, and we are his children. Most good ideas are simple, and this concept was the keystone of the new and triumphant arch through which we passed to freedom. We were now at step three. Many of us said to our Maker, as we understood him, God, I offer myself to thee, to build with me, and to do with me as thou wilt. Relieve me of the bondage of self, that I may better do thy will. Take away my difficulties, that victory over them may bear witness to those I would help, of thy power, thy love, and thy way of life. May I do thy will always. We thought well before taking this step, making sure we were ready, that we could at last abandon ourselves utterly to him. You'll have like 60 seconds each.
Gotcha. I love this book. And relieve me of the bondage of self, that I may better do thy will. Take away my difficulties, that victory over them may bear witness to those I would help, of thy power, thy love, and thy way of life. That's the prayer I say every day. And it's through my demonstration and the way I behave, the way I treat people, that I hope others around me can see that I'm trying to live this life the way my higher power wants me to. Thanks.
I have loved taking this step with sponsees. It was much more meaningful than when I did it with my counselor 2 weeks sober. All my sponsees who we've done this, they pick the spot where we do it. We can say this prayer or any other prayer that they like. And it's been really beautiful every single time. And I guess for years I took out the part, was it take away my difficulties?
Mm-hmm.
I was like, you don't need to do that. I got it. I got this. She thought I was praying the third step when I took that line out because I thought I didn't need God's help. So, you know, sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly. The third step for me today really looks like I was telling my sponsor that I was having a hard time surrendering this cancer stuff to God because I'm doing all this research and changing my meds, and I feel like it's up to me. You know, like, it's like, if I rely on God, I'm going to die. It's up to me to save my life. And then she's like, have you thought that maybe God's inspiring you or putting the right book in your path or, you know, like, no. It was either me or God. I this whole partnership, not the partners. Yeah, like, I'm equal with God, you know, but an agent. It doesn't come naturally for me to believe that there is a higher power that cares about me as a person. It just doesn't come naturally, but when I choose to believe that, my life is better. Thanks.
All right. We're going to pass the seventh tradition basket. The seventh tradition states every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, The seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their intergroup central office, local services, district, area, and the general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose to help the alcoholic who still suffers. Although the amount of our contribution is secondary to the spiritual connection that unites all groups around the world, we may want to remember that a dollar does not support as many services as it did previously. Announcements. Are there any AA-related announcements?
Hi, my name's Aaliyah and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Aaliyah.
My home group, AA 101, we meet at Norfolk Sentara Heart Hospital. June 30th, we are having our half anniversary. 10:30 is the eats, 11 is the speaks. The speaker panel is at 11 a.m. We're doing a three-person speaker panel. 10 a.m. is fellowship and food. So we would be honored if you all can come join us. Thanks for letting me share. June 30th.
June 30th. Anybody else?
Uh-huh. I'm Brenda, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Brenda. Hey, Brenda.
This Saturday, June the 29th, will be Saturday of Service. It's for all the districts in the Tidewater area. It's put on by Tidewater Intergroup Council. It starts at 11 with food, all kinds of good stuff. Then your DCMs, your intergroup chairman, and your Virginia Area Conference delegate will be speaking and giving her report on what's going on. You know, y'all are the home group, and they work for us. So go see how you fellows are doing. So this Saturday, June the 29th, St. Christopher Episcopal Church in Portsmouth.
And it sounds like indentured servitude or a truly hideous way to spend a weekend, but it's exciting,
yes.
And it's learning new things, and it's finding out about this thing, how it works, how it keeps us sober.
Yes.
And the delegate will have just come from New York. So we will be the first group of people getting the information about AA across the country.
Mm-hmm.
And they feed you. The food is free and plentiful. All right. Anybody else?
Well, don't eat too much.
Well, yeah. Okay. Simple Actions is a home group. If you are interested in joining our home group, please see one of us after the meeting. Home group members, please raise your hands. Newcomers, is there anyone in their first 30 days of sobriety? We would like to welcome you.
Hey, welcome.
Welcome.
Matt,
hey, Matt, welcome.
Shelby,
hey, Shelby.
Shelby, welcome. Good to have you. Okay, literature is available on the table to my right. Most of it is free. If you want a big book, please talk to a home group member. Sponsorship. Sponsorship in AA is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. If you have questions or would like additional information about sponsorship, I will be available at this table after we close the meeting. Please feel free to come talk to me. Reminder, smokers, please use the butt can provided outside. Stay well away from the church doors. All meeting audio recordings and upcoming events are posted on our website, simpleactions.net. In closing, please help me thank the panel again.
Thanks, Brenda. Thank you.
Thanks to all who participated. After we clean up, all are invited and encouraged to continue the conversation on the step discussed tonight at the meeting after the meeting, which will be held at Plaza del Sol. That's on 22nd and Colonial. And will someone volunteer to read the last two paragraphs on page 164, BJ?
My name is BJ. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, BJ.
Our book is meant to be subjective only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. but obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.
All right, we have a nice way to close.
Amen.
Come on, go hold up the show. Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom,